Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. So Mark, man, here's the deal. I've been thinking a lot lately about my relationship with God and how it's evolved over time in this process. I'm not quite sure why it's been on my mind of late, but I know that we were talking a little bit before the podcast today and about what we're going to talk about, and something that seemed to resonate is sharing a little bit, I think, with our viewers the journey that all of us or that you and I specifically have gone on in this process. We get a lot of feedback from clients and from listeners, you know, with concerns and questions about the role of a higher power or God in their recovery. And obviously, everybody's journey is different. But Mark and I have been doing this long enough, I think, that you and I, we've really seen a lot of similarities in the journey that you and I have taken, in terms of it being, you know, close in many respects to the journey that many of the guys and the women that we work with have to take.
No, it's a great topic, because if you were to ask me what is the most radical change that I've experienced with regards to the difference between addiction and recovery over the years or decades, and it has to be in this realm. My whole understanding of God, how I related to him or didn't relate to him, where I am today versus where I was then. It's like it's universes apart.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's it. Yeah. Let's just talk about it and kind of, I guess we could call this episode what? Reflections on God?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're kind of wheeling and dealing on this one, everybody. We are very much looking at this through a perspective of being unscripted today, and just kind of want to share some raw, real thoughts. And we have high hopes that your higher power can kind of convey to you what we mean and what we're referring to. So, and it's our hope that, as always, you guys pull whatever you feel is best from this podcast today and will be of benefit. You know, my journey with God, in my mind, has not that it's more so than anyone else's, but it really has been an epic journey. I was raised in a really, really conservative religious household with parents who were great, amazing people. My dad was definitely more of the nurturer growing up. That wasn't so much my mom. She definitely did her part with that, but it tended to be more of an emphasis from my dad. At least that's how it resonated with me. And as I've shared before on here, when my dad was killed when I was 13, I really started to question a lot of things, like anybody I think would in that period. And one of the biggest parts of that was you know, this whole religion, God dynamic and like what it meant in my life. I'd always been taught in this conservative, strict household that there was a very clear, almost linear distinction between the actions that I would take and the blessings that God would give me or that I would receive.
Yep.
And it was almost linear. And even though that may not have been what was taught technically, there was a lot of religious culture, I guess you could say, that got in, maybe got mixed in with the quote unquote doctrine that probably led to some of that. But by that point, you know, I'd had leukemia twice prior to my dad's passing. I'd had a bone marrow transplant. I'd gone through chemotherapy and radiation on two separate times. I had a difficult time relating to kids my age because, you know, when I went back to school after 2 years of being in treatment for that kind of stuff and hanging out with adults and dealing with adult things, I just could not relate to kids my age. They were all concerned with like the cartoons they were going to watch. And I'd just been so used to thinking about, you know, how am I going to stay alive? You know, like, yeah. Am I going to be alive tomorrow? And so I was kind of at an early age, I think I was kind of contemplating a lot of that stuff that maybe a lot of people don't necessarily in that way. And I remember when my dad passed away, there was a real feeling of, you know, we talk oftentimes of betrayal trauma. If I'm thinking about it right now in real time, there was a lot of betrayal trauma that happened with that period of time. I felt like I'd been shortchanged by God. I felt like from my 13-year-old brain, I felt like I'd tried so hard to be a good kid. I'd tried to be a good person. I tried to, you know, keep the commandments and all of those different things that were taught in religious homes. And I kept feeling like we weren't getting blessed. I wasn't getting blessed. It's like I was almost getting punished more. And when my uncle died, who was my dad's brother, two or three years later, I remember something inside my brain almost in a more traumatic way almost snapped, more so than even with my dad, because it was almost sort of a confirming evidence of what I was already suspecting, which is that I can't rely on or connect with anybody because everybody is at some point going to let me down. God isn't going to have my back. He took my dad, and then he took my uncle away, who tried to fill in for my dad. And just as I got close to him, he was gone. And up to that point, I was struggling to see how God was even playing a role in my life. And so I remember that was the total perfect storm of sexual curiosity just beginning, mixed with this notion that I cannot connect, I cannot be real, I cannot be authentic, I cannot be vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see that with a lot of the guys that I work with, you know, for different reasons. Everyone's story is so different, but it's interesting how there are all of us, I think, well, not maybe all of us, but many of us, how many of us carry that God trauma as both addicts and spouses.
Yeah. And my, you know, the outcome for me is very similar to where you ended up. I think the origins of it were a little different for me.
Yeah.
So I was raised, you know, my mother gave birth to me as a teen, and you know, all the things that go along with that.
Yeah.
And my mom was severely traumatized as a kid, and she carried enormous shame. And so imagine you're being raised by a teenage mom with carrying all of that burden and shame. And what I learned from her was that this whole God thing, you have to prove your way into his good graces. Mm-hmm. You have to show him that you're worthy of his help and of his acceptance. And so I grew up trying to prove that continually.
Yeah.
It's all about what you do. It's all about how you look. It's all about whether you fit the mold, you know, the religious mold. And like you've said, all the commandments and all of the, you know, different practices and processes. And are you doing all that perfectly?
Yeah.
And only if you are, then he'll step in and he can help you if you're one of those chosen few in the circle. And I just, basically what happened to me is I worked myself to exhaustion trying to be that guy.
Yeah.
Like you, it was about the same age, around 13 or so. I finding was because I was just done and I had nothing left. And so now we go, we go seek to self-soothe, to escape, to medicate, to feel accepted, to be, to feel valued in some way.
Yeah.
And God just wasn't there for me. And the harder I tried, the more I realized I was messing up and the further I was from getting his help. I got farther and farther away. The harder I tried to get close to him, the more the gap widened.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think that authenticity piece, I think for both of us is, you know, you and I have talked about our stories extensively together. The lack of authenticity that I think we both felt for different reasons, or we were pressured to portray, you know, in different ways growing up.
Oh, yes.
I very much was a dichotomy of kind of having that outer shell of playing the part.
Yep.
You know, looking the role. True story. My high school class voted me most likely to become a seminary teacher.
Yeah, right.
Like I served in some religious positions at a fairly young age, and it was such a strange experience living it, because on the one hand, I did have this set of beliefs that I adhered to and I did believe in on some level, but then there was this whole underpinning that we're talking about, this traumatic underpinning that was undermining everything. But the culture that I grew up in, probably like many of our listeners, was that it's not okay to question God. That was never a doctrinal concept, but it very much was a cultural one. That was very much frowned upon and kind of shunned or resisted. You know, it's, you know, questioning God is, you know, or his motives or what he does in my life, or, you know, really looking at that too closely wasn't necessarily a sin, but it was very much taboo for sure.
Yeah, for sure. No, and I, you know, I remembered that, that duplicity, always feeling like I was an imposter, always feeling like I, you know, I was a fake, because I was putting on this huge exterior, you know, facade. Mm-hmm. You had to look right, talk right, have everyone think well of you, appear to be pious and totally faithful and all the rest of those things, because I was taught that's the only way you're acceptable.
Yeah.
But man, inside and in secret, I was like, I am so far from that. And it would just rip me apart, because I knew that I wasn't living, you know, in the depths of my soul, what I was portraying.
Yeah.
And that created a conflict, an inner conflict and a disconnect inside of me that was just devastating.
Well, when I think one, probably if I was to look at a common trait that I've carried and that I see with clients, is this notion of being kind of the exception. And that's where I think a lot of the problems with a lot of the disconnect with God either stem from or contribute to other issues, because I could think of example after example that I could tell you, just watching our time here today, where I was in different instances ranging from religious missionary work to other things that I was doing, where one half of me would come out and say the right thing, talk about how, you know, how much God can change things in my life and make things better and improve things. And one half of my brain believing it completely that those concepts were true. But here was the key. Somewhere along the line, I learned that through my experiences and through my God trauma, that even though all those things were true, I was an exception.
Yep.
I was an aberration. One of my favorite phrases that I heard you use once years ago, and I've heard you use it in lecture since, is, and it resonated with me, is this concept of being outside of Christ's circle.
Yes.
Love that concept, because that's exactly very much how it felt. It wasn't that the dinner party wasn't going on. It's that I was stuck outside with no invitation.
Yep. You're standing out looking inside through the window and knowing that I'll never get inside there.
Yes.
Right? I'm going to try. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep exhausting myself, but it'll never happen.
Not for me. It will happen for other people.
Yep. All this stuff works for everyone except me.
Yes.
Yeah. And all the guys, firstly, everybody I work with has some form of that feeling.
Yeah.
Weirdness, you know, weirdness. Like we said, outside the circle-ness.
Yes.
And it's pervasive.
Well, and we're making this kind of a raw and real podcast, as you guys can see today, but I am a therapist by nature. I mean, what we're really talking about is the term that I've the clinical term is, you know, what we call terminal uniqueness,
yep.
right? Or taking this sense, this idea, or this notion that I am different and I'm an exception to the rule, all the way to the point of, you know, cutting myself off in, you know, really significant, deep ways, not just from a higher power, but from everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Because if I'm the exception, then who can understand me? And if I'm the exception to God's plan, then why would he give a damn?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when you're left in that place of not feeling understood by anybody who is here with you on this planet, and your higher power, that God that you worship, you feel like may understand you, but doesn't really accept you because you're not cutting it for some reason. That is a dangerous line of thought, a dangerous track of thought. And I think addiction is really just the beginning of the problems that can stem from that.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Mark and Steve here. Are you looking to take your recovery and your marriage to the next level?
We work with individuals and couples one-on-one.
With both in-person and online therapy options, you have access to the experts anytime, anywhere.
To learn more, visit us at pbscpodcast.com.
Yeah, and so I mean, we could talk for hours about the God trauma,
yes,
you know, that we suffered with. But if we start to talk about how the transition happened for us, as I start to look at that, you know, the first thing was for me, and I'm really hard headed. Mm-hmm. I like to say it isn't a 2x4 against Mark's head; it's like a 12x12 that you have to smack me in the skull for me to get it.
That's a big board.
Right, a 12x12.
I'm just picturing a 12x12. That's just like a tree.
A tree, yes. You have to literally hit me with a tree. And I finally got to the place after decades and decades of exhausting myself, trying to earn my way into that, you know, privileged circle. I just had nothing left.
Yeah.
I got to the place where I just truly had nothing, not even a drop of energy left. And I like to say it's when I finally cried uncle, you know, like picture yourself in the playground, a kid's got you in a headlock and he's saying, say uncle. And you're like, no, I won't.
Yeah.
And I did that forever until it's like, okay, all right, God, I'm crying uncle. I got nothing left. My way has been a complete disaster. And so now I'm feeling a little bit of willingness to begin to open myself.
Yes.
I often talk about what a crazy, just big aha moment that was for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I suddenly realized that my whole life I had been straining and struggling and fighting and just doing everything I could. And the whole time, right there, within right at my fingertips, was this infinite, loving grace and power and help that was right there. And all I had to do was just call upon it.
Yeah.
And when I realized that was true, I was like, I am the dumbest person that ever lived on the planet. Are you telling me that was there the whole time?
Mm.
And it was so amazing to realize that.
Well, I love what you're saying. I just to kind of add to that perspective, though, and maybe I'll ask the question of you because I've got my own thoughts and answers to this. Is, you know, what was the cause of that, right? Because I don't. You might disagree, but I don't buy into the idea that Mark was just dumb or unintelligent about things spiritual, and then magically woke up. At least for me and what I know about you, I think it's much more complicated than that because it had everything to do with our understanding of God's identity.
Yes.
And attributes.
Yeah. If you were really to boil it down for me, I've recognized this about myself over the years, and I've helped a lot of guys see this. It's actually the opposite of what you might think.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't that we struggle all those years detached from our higher power because we lack spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't because we don't care. It's because we hyper care. I
agree
work
with that.
Guys that are not just spiritual, they're hyper spiritual.
Yes.
They want so desperately to please God, so with all their soul to measure up in his eyes, to have yes. him smile and say, well done. And I wanted that so desperately the whole time that I was growing up. It's just like, I just want him to just give me that approving look just once.
Yep.
I was desperate Absolutely. For it. So it wasn't that I didn't care. I cared a bunch.
Yeah.
And I could just, I was never going to get there. It was too big. It was too high. Mm-hmm. It was perfection. I was seeking for perfection.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah.
Well, it, yeah. Well, and I think there's got to be a transformation, right? When it comes to that perspective on God and how he works in our lives, because yeah, as I look back, I mean, I didn't see at the time, obviously, like anybody, but you know, I think God really had to pull a patient card with me a little bit. because I, you know, again, kind of my story feels very epic to me because I remember where the turning point for me was. And this is a key point I wanted to bring up because I think this, hopefully this will resonate with some listeners out there, is that I remember for the, I had an experience with God that essentially culminated in, calling it a prayer is probably too generous, but I just told God, you know, that in very vulgar terms that he clearly didn't care about me. So I was done caring about him mm-hmm. and I want out, like I'm done.
Yeah.
And I was ready to like leave my church. I was ready to just call it. And I was drowning in every single area of my life. My marriage was crumbling because of addiction. My self-confidence was zero. And even though that was a horrible, awful experience, that vulnerability, which I'd been always kind of impressed upon as a child, that kind of vulnerability, which was so wrong and so not okay.
Yep.
Right? When I exercised that, looking back, I very strongly feel it was almost as though God kind of sat up in his chair. I don't know if God sits on anything, but kind of sat up in his chair and more or less said, oh, look at this. Steve and I are actually having a real conversation for the first time in 25 years.
Yes.
And it very much was a sense of welcome. I've been waiting for this.
Right.
Which was so different, right? Because that changed everything about the identity for me. It was a very strong impression. It went from God being this abstract, distant Lord over you, waiting for you to screw up, you know, meeting out things in a very rigid sense, to his children from some duty-bound perspective, and it changed it all in its head to a God that loved and cared about me enough that he was waiting on me for 25 years to get real.
Yes, to get real.
And what a dynamic shift that was, and there was a long journey tied to that, but when you start to open up and start to entertain the idea that maybe, I guess this is the thing that I wanted to bring up and throw out to the audience and in kind of a metaphorical question form. Are you shackling God in your life? Are you putting chains or handcuffs? Are you tying God's hands in your life by limiting him? Is your perspective, is your paradigm, your spiritual paradigm holding you back from really accessing and really having a relationship there?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I, you know, as I think of that, and I, my experience was similar to yours, you know, there finally came a time when I could actually be raw and vulnerable and real with God. I mean, it was so bad for me. And I know we have a lot of people who've experienced this. I couldn't have a conversation with God really, because you had to have the right words and the right terminology and the,
yes,
you know, in my faith, the these and the thous, and if you didn't say it right, then he, you know, he wouldn't approve of the conversation in the first place.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I had to plow through a lot of that, which I call religiosity, in order to get to the spirituality, which is my connection to my God. Very personal, very intimate, but I had to plow through a whole lot of junk,
yes,
to get to that place.
Yes.
And once I started to see it, it was so exciting. It's like, wow, is this what it is? Is this who he is? Like,
yes.
Like he's that accessible? He's yeah. that completely unconditional in how he loves and accepts me? Mm-hmm. I was just blown away. I never had supposed such a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that really separating God and religion, I think for a lot of people, our listeners, I know just hearing from you guys from week to week is really difficult. because they're so deeply intertwined. And I want to be clear, neither one of us is in any way bagging on religion. We both are still active in our religions of our youth. But I would say that being able to separate those and reckon, I mean, for me, what I have concluded is the following. Religion at the end of the day, even though it is amazing and wonderful, inspired and all of those things, and I really do believe that, it is a vehicle designed to feed, to serve that spiritual relationship, that one-on-one connection with God.
Yes.
And it's only useful as far as it does that in whatever capacity it does, right? Be it through blessings or other types of things, but that's only as far as it can take me. And oftentimes I found that in the past for myself and for clients, that we almost in a way without realizing it, we kind of become a victim to the religion, and we're sort of waiting it to carry us to that relationship with mm-hmm. God, as opposed to saying, okay, this religion component, this can benefit me, but I have got to get real with God on my terms. And yes. I've got to have that one-on-one intimate, you see. There we go.
Yes, everybody. There it is again.
Mark says it every week. I'm throwing it in this week. That intimacy factor, that intimacy you see, there's got to be that happening. Otherwise, what am I really doing here? What progress am I really making? Am I able to really utilize this huge, amazing, huge tool in recovery in my life?
Well, and you know, you and I have experienced it, and so many that we work with, this is so severe that we have to take them through an exercise. You know, we call it, you know, fire your false god and hire the true one.
Yep.
I actually have them write a dismissal letter. Okay. Mm-hmm. God, here's who you've been. Here's what you put me through. I'm firing you. You're terminated. No longer needed. And then I have them write a wanted ad. Mm. You know, God wanted. And here's how he is. Here's the qualifications I'm looking for. Yeah. And the wonderful thing is when they do that, the wanted ad, so to speak, that I see, it really does harmonize with who God truly is.
Yeah.
All those that I've ever reviewed, it's like, yeah, you're now in the realm of who he is. Look at that. You know, so it's a tough process. One of the things I see as we start to talk about some applications and solutions for this, I still find myself, and I have to watch it careful, I will go back into it's all up to me mode.
Sure.
At the drop of a hat. And what I'll find, here's how I liken that today. So when I go back into me mode, it's like I'm at Home Depot. I'm in the aisle with all the power tools, all these glitzy, wonderful, beautiful power tools of all shapes and sizes. And I'm holding them and the crappy thing won't work. I'm pushing the trigger on it. I start slamming it on the shelf in Home Depot. Why won't this work? Mm-hmm. And it's all there, all the tools, all the stuff. But guess what's missing? The power source, the electricity.
Sure. Yeah.
And how many times did you and I bang our heads trying to figure out why these tools aren't helping me
in our
addiction years? And what we were missing was plug the blasted thing into the wall.
Yeah.
So and true. I have to stop and pause to go, oh boy, I've disconnected from him again. I've gone into proving myself mode. And I see that with myself. I see it. I can see it in my marriage. I have some couples I've worked with where they're banging their head against the wall as a couple. They argue, they fight, nothing's going well. And I'm like, so have you paused for a moment as a couple to invite that third party into the exchange, into the experience? Mm-hmm. Is it a partnership? Is it a triangle, a triad? Or is it still the two of you blasting your heads against each other, trying to figure this out when the power is right there? Have you invited it? Have you dropped to your knees and had a vulnerable, heartfelt pleading with God to help the two of you? And you literally voice that with one another, you know, in your agony in the relationship. And how often do we don't even stop to think about that aspect in what we're trying to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so God, like our title said, God becomes a problem instead of a solution.
Yeah.
And it's just because, right, you got all those power tools, but I'm not going to plug that thing into the wall. Nope. I'm going to figure out how to use this without electricity.
Well, and I think a big part of that too is understand, this goes back to what you were talking about from your early childhood. It's understanding and coming to a better understanding, or a clearer understanding maybe, of how that power is accessed.
Yes.
Right?
I know.
Because there was always that, you and I've talked often about kind of metaphorically, where I live, there's an amusement park nearby. And when you go to this amusement park, just like any other amusement park, there's this goofy little character. In this case, I think it's Yogi Bear. Probably a copyright violation. But anyway, Yogi Bear's standing there and he's holding up his kind of hand, you know. And it says, you know, in order to ride this ride, you must be, 48 inches tall, or, whatever the case may be. And I remember as a kid looking at that and it would always be frustrating. You couldn't go on the bigger rides or whatever. But it's a really good example, I think, of what you were talking about before, and very much how I felt. And I think many of our clients, definitely addicts and many partners, have felt. It's this, yes, this power's there. Yes, it's accessible. Yes, the ride exists. That's great. But I never can seem to grow tall enough to get on it.
To qualify for the ride.
Yes, I'm always going to be left on the outside. And looking at that, investigating that, I think on an individual level has a lot of merit, because that's where I think that's where you listeners, where this can benefit you the most, is saying, are those qualifications, if I am restricted by those, are those actually accurate?
Yes.
Are those real qualifications on God's end, or are they perceived? Have those been a construct of culture or other notions? And being able to recognize, that maybe entertain the idea. You have to really go into this with an openness, which I think is hard for us who come from religious cultures, because it's highly structured. But you have to go into this with an understanding that, my journey with God should be something that is ongoing and consistent. And the minute I've learned that the minute I decide that me and God are good and I totally get him, is probably the minute I'm screwed, because that relationship, I have found, keeps evolving. Not to say God is changing in my life, but my understanding, my relationship, my level of trust, my overcoming of that past baggage with him is constantly evolving.
Yeah. And as we finish up, I had an experience with one of my sons years ago, and the very thing you're talking about. We got to the ride. So he showed up. He was at the amusement park. He got in line. He waited in line till his turn came. He did everything he could, right?
Yeah.
He gets up there and he looks at that little line that says how tall you have to be. And you should have seen the disappointment on his face. He was literally shattered when he wasn't tall enough.
Yeah.
What did I do? Because I was in recovery and actually a healthy person who could think straight. I said, hey, just come over here and stand on my feet so that when we get up to that line, you'll be tall enough. And so he did. And his face just lit up. He was suddenly tall enough. And I didn't notice he was standing on my feet, and he got on the ride. But so for us and all the people we work with, how much is it like that with God? We can only do so much. And he says, come and stand on my feet, stand on my toes, and you'll be tall enough.
Sure. And
that's called grace.
Yeah.
And it's there for us at all times in our recovery, in our betrayal, trauma, healing, in our marriages. Stand on God's feet. Let
yes.
him lift you to the place that you need to be.
Yes. Well, and I know we've got to wrap up, but I hope that this has been helpful for all you listeners out there. It's obviously a different track than we take oftentimes many weeks. We like to mix it up here on this podcast and bring you ever increasingly interesting let's just say interesting approaches. I think that, we've got, there's lots of, there's huge potential here that oftentimes goes unaccessed. Mark and I are both very much aware that many of our colleagues out in the therapeutic community tend to shy away from all things kind of higher power. And when you start talking about God and like throwing that label on it, it gets even more so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, speaking for myself, and I think Mark is in agreement with this, where I see the magic happen in my practice, where I see it happen in my clients' lives, is where I, as the therapist, take the very best in clinical training that I can find and experience and all of that. And then we pair it with this spiritual stuff.
Yes.
Because to me, psychology and spirituality don't have to be enemies. One doesn't exclude the other. I think one actually validates and supports the other.
Totally agree. Yeah. So take some time. Your assignment is, you know, take some time to think about where are areas in your life, perhaps where you've blocked God out for whatever, you know, myriad reasons, mm-hmm. some ways that you can invite him in.
Where or some, limited his power, right?
Yeah. How have you limited his power? How have you kept yourself from drawing upon that? And talk raw and real about it. Ponder it on yourself. Talk about it as a couple. How can we invite him in more openly, more acceptingly? How can, maybe there's some things we need to surrender that we're trying to do all on our own. We need to let them go and invite him in and ask, how would you do it? What is your way?
Yeah.
So just start to assess that. Just take a look at it. You know, call it a God assessment.
Absolutely.
Kind of see where you're at.
Love that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great rest of your week.
All right. See you next time. That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety. It's connection. Together, we can do the impossible.
To learn more about Mark and Steve and to listen to more podcast episodes, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.